It's time to step into the Coming Out Lounge, a cool, safe space to be true to your sexual self, with your host, Rick Clemens. Rick has helped hundreds of people come out of the closet, and now each week he's bringing you cool insights for loving and accepting yourself, boosting your self-confidence, and living a guilt-free, purpose-filled life on the other side of the closet doors. Cuddle up with yourself and get ready for heartwarming coming out stories, ideas for living authentically, and tips for being fully self-expressed. Now here's your host, Coming Out Coach Rick.
Hey, 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 Closet Busters. It is time once again to come out of the closet and step into the Coming Out Lounge. And today we're going to be talking to a musician who's just released his album. And one of the things that I'm most excited about is that he's kind of taken some stuff head on that speaks to the current climate of our country. And if there's something that's really, really clear about Indiana Queen's founder and sole member, Kevin Thornton, it's that he's passionate about his work. And he has a really razor-sharp vision about what he wants to be doing in the music industry. In fact, his latest piece that's titled Summon Without Sorrow is really a visceral journey into music through his artistic eye. And he's also taken a stab at what it's like to be queer in the world of country music and how at times he feels like he could be a fish out of water, but instead he's really trying to be that shark that eats the fish and grabs folk by their musical balls and helps them really see things from a different space. And the end result is quite honestly some really beautiful music and videos that interrelate together to tell one singular story about pride and love and acceptance. So when you start to listen to some of his lyrics, you're going to be kind of taken aback, but I want to make sure as you hear things like well-endowed angels descend and the weight of their cocks are sinking them to the earth, that you might think he's just about the LGBTQ community, but he's not. He's really, truly delivering some beautiful visual extremes in his music that make for everyone to kind of stop and take pause regardless of their sexual preference. So even though he's weaving some rather homoerotic stuff into his music, I want you to also listen for the spiritual references, kind of the modern dancing stuff he's got in there, and his really, truly straightforward singing approach as if he was like staring you right out through the camera lens. And I just love what he's doing. I'm so glad and excited to have him here. Welcome to the show, Kevin Thornton, the lead singer of Indiana Queen. Hey, Kevin, thanks for being here, man.
Hey, no problem. It's my pleasure.
Yeah, so you're from Nashville, having a nice little winter holiday season there in Nashville, but you just released your brand new album, didn't you?
Yeah, it just came out, so I'm excited for people to finally get to hear it. It's been about a year in the making.
That's awesome, man. And I know that this is, you know, there's a lot of stuff in there. We're going to talk about, you know, Summon Without Sorrow and about how that was kind of looking down the pipeline to a Trump administration, which we're all starting to live with here. But let's kind of step back before we do that, because I think there's some interesting stuff to talk about around, you know, first of all, being in the good old South and being a Nashville guy and a country singer and how that all unravels for you as a gay man. I'm sure you've been asked the questions numerous times about, you know, what's it like, but I'd rather come from the space of what are you personally trying to do through your music that really sets you up as a gay man without it being the pinpoint of your artistry?
Well, I've been in Nashville for almost 20 years now. And when I first showed up here, I mean, this was the late 90s when I first showed up here, and I was out the moment I rolled into town. It never even really occurred to me to not be who I truly am. I mean, especially for folk music and country music, it's all based around honesty and sincerity. I mean, that kind of is the appeal of like roots music. So it just, when I got here, I was out in my song lyric, in my persona. And everyone was like, you've got to tone that down. You can't tell people that. You're killing your career. And, I mean, maybe they were right. Looking back 20 years, it didn't really happen in those early days. But I was just out from the very beginning. And Nashville has always been like a super progressive city. Yep. I mean, I'm in the South, and Tennessee is not necessarily the most progressive place. But Nashville is. Mm-hmm. And it even was back in those days, too. But now that the world has totally changed, I think it's, I'm just being myself, but yeah. I mean, the world has shifted enough now where I think they're ready to hear root music from a gay perspective, you know? So I think the world has just kind of shifted and evolved and is ready for, you know, for what I'm doing at this
point. I agree. And I was asking some of my clients and some of my listeners who dialogue with me on a regular basis said, hey, I've got this guy coming on. He's a country singer, kind of a country folk singer, and he's an out gay guy. And one of the questions that one of them said is, so, you know, if you could change anything in Nashville around this perception, what do you think is like the biggest thing to change in Nashville around being out and being proud about being LGBTQ? If you could like wave that magic wand, what would you change?
I think, well, God, you know, this is a tricky one because like if you had asked me this question a month ago, I think I would have answered differently. But now that we're about to enter like a new era of Republican darkness,
right?
I'm not sure how the world is going to feel a year from now. But I mean, a month ago I would have answered the world is ready. And I mean, there are definitely some people obviously in our country who are not ready to admit that gay people and trans people are real and voting a certain way doesn't make us disappear.
Right.
You know, I think that a month ago I would have said there is an audience out there that is so ready to hear roots music from a different perspective. That's not straight guy in a pickup truck drinking beer. You know, like there's a 90s superstar country singer named Ty Herndon. There's a friend of mine here in town and, you know, his career kind of fell apart in the 90s because of a gay scandal, but now he's coming back and he's totally out. His fans are embracing him. I mean, I think that would be the thing I'd say, you know, a month ago I would have said, sign some gay country artists. The world is ready. But now I'm not sure what's going to happen.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I think that's kind of where we all are is, you know, we don't know what's really going to happen. You know, as much as I would like to believe in the goodness of humanity, I know I'm sitting here, you know, I'm not near at the level that you are or other people out in that world. But I've had my own bits and pieces of already some backlash coming at me since the election because I'm out there. You know, my podcast is out there. I got a book out. And it's just so interesting to see, you know, how people are creeping in with their hate, you know, as almost like, okay, now we've got the permission slip. So now we get to go do this. And it's rather unsettling, you know, at most. So another question that one of my listeners asks is, so is there like a, you know, is there like a network of all the gay artists know each other? And I said, that's like asking, is there a network that all gay people know each other? But I laughed and I thought, well, okay, I'm going to put that out there in front of him. But you did bring up Ty and, you know, I'm just wondering, is there like this kind of interesting little inner circle that, you know, everyone who is gay and lesbian in the country music world kind of bands together? Or is it more of, you know, yeah, we know they're out there, but we're not all like sitting around singing Kumbaya together.
Well, I guess funny enough, there is sort of like a, I mean, it's a small town.
Right.
And so, yeah, I would say that we all know who each other are
sure.
in town. That's probably true. It's a town that's growing a lot, but we're still a small town.
Yeah.
And especially like 10 years ago, I mean, we only have a couple of gay bars.
Yep.
So you go out on a Saturday night and you learn all kinds of things, you know, and you see everyone who, you know, who might work on Music Row. I mean, you know, there's only a couple of options of places to go out. You know, I would say that, I guess it's kind of funny, but that is true that, you know, we know who each other are aware of.
Well, and the reason I wanted
to... The gays in the industry.
Yeah, and the reason I wanted to go ahead and ask that question was to kind of make a point of how this is a good example of, it depends on where you are in the world, how you interact within your own LGBTQ circle. Because, you know, out here on the West Coast or the, you know, the East Coast or any of the places that are highly populous, you know, for someone to assume that, oh, yeah, and I always laugh because like, oh, yeah, I have a gay cousin. Do you know him? Well, no, just because I'm gay doesn't mean I know your cousin.
Yeah.
But then you have to kind of put it into perspective when you get to an area of the country like you're in. I mean, you know, before we got on the air, I was talking to Kevin about, you know, having gone to college just outside of Chattanooga. And I wasn't out at the time. I mean, everybody knows my story that I was not out, came out later in life. But I remember how closeted it was. And even though I did interact with some gay guys and knew who I was to some degree, there was like, I believe, only one gay bar in Chattanooga at that time. And I'm talking 83, 84, somewhere along those lines. So
yeah.
I think... Yes, you kind of have to put it in perspective of how we as LGBTQ people band together and support each other depending on where we are. And it makes for community and it makes for a really good support system. So With that being said, what was the support system like for you as you started to, you know, you said you arrived in Nashville already out. What kind of support mm-hmm. system did you start leaning into as you started to hear this kind of, you know, backlash, so to speak, of, oh, you got to tone this down and you're going to ruin your career? Where did you lean into for support at that time?
I don't know if there really was support. I mean, the guys in my band, and that's probably it. I mean, you got to remember, like, this is like the Bush administration, and yep. everyone was putting those W stickers on the back of their cars. I mean, I remember at the time, I mean, there was such a, you know, family values, sanctity of marriage thing happening. When I saw mm-hmm. all those W stickers, kind of saw those as homophobic. Like, yeah. I felt like people were like putting them on the cars because I stand for family values. W, you know, and here in Nashville, those were everywhere,
oh,
you know,
sure.
And so when the guy in the record office says, tone it down, you know, and then I walk out into the parking lot into a sea of W stickers, I mean, I kind of just accepted that that's the world I was in, you mm-hmm. know, and so probably just the guys in my band, and that's it, because they accepted me, and they, at the time, the guys I were playing with
yeah.
were not gay. I was the only gay in the band.
Mm-hmm.
So we toured full time, so I lived in a van with those guys for, you know, almost 10 years.
Wow.
So they were my support system.
Absolutely.
And I think you know, it was a different world in that era. And so I just kind of embraced the, you know, the things were not going to, you know, necessarily be in my favor all the time. So,
mm-hmm. you know, I'm really glad you brought up this touring with guys, because I think this is one of those crazy assumptions that people make that, oh my God, you're a gay guy and now you're in a, like a very heteronormative environment, so to speak. I hate to put that umbrella over this situation, but here you are, you're a guy with all these guys in your band touring with them. And the first assumption a lot of people love to jump to, not all people, but a lot of people who like are really homophobic, like, oh my God, he's going to make a move on the guys. I mean, that's just completely crazy, right?
Well, yeah. At the time, I literally in a van, in a hotel room, like we never rarely left each other's sides.
Right.
So there was none of that.
Well, yeah. And, you know, it's always funny because, you know, I did an article not too long. Oh, it's been a while ago, but I interviewed a bunch of straight guys that were in different circles of mine, not necessarily friends. I mean, I'm talking professional circles. And I said, hey, guys, I'm going to write this article. And I, you know, I want to talk about the interaction of gay men with straight men, and specifically how you guys feel about knowing if you've discovered that there's a gay guy in the locker room, at the gym, changing with you at the same time. And it was really powerful because, and maybe it was because the guys I just happened to pick, but I kind of tried to pick them at random, not knowing them really well. And that's why I picked these guys for the article. Not one of them was flipped out about this. They're like, hey, you know, whatever, you know. And a couple of them said, you know, I've actually been hit on by some gay guys. And it's like, hey, cool, I really appreciate it. But yeah, I'm not playing on that team. And they just move on. And so I think this is where, yeah. you know, starting to move through these kind of conversations, and that's the reason I do this podcast, is to not only help those who are hiding, but hopefully as others may start to listen to this from other walks of life, you go, this isn't what we're all about. And I think
yeah.
that's where I see your music starting to come in, and some of the lyrics that you bring forward starting to show there's another side to this and there's other ways to be in this. So what's been the most challenging thing then? You know, you land in Nashville, you kind of get told, you know, hey, tone this down. But what's been the most, if there is a most challenging thing, what's been most challenging for you throughout the years in this industry?
The same thing it is for everybody else. The music business is a beast. I mean, it's just really damn hard.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, that's what's been the most difficult. You know what? We got my first record deal right at the same time when like iTunes was really kind of coming out. This is around like 2007-ish.
Yep.
And the music industry was changing so hard and fast. And I mean, we knew things were changing, but we didn't really understand how extreme and how
mm-hmm.
like YouTube wasn't even really out yet at that time, I don't think. And like,
right.
so we got this big record deal. It was kind of one of the last big record deals. Like they literally misspent about $100,000 on us over the course of a year.
Wow.
And it was following like the old music business model, which wasn't going to work anymore. And everything was going online and we were still kind of following this old school model, and it just crashed and burned and fell apart. And I quit for a while because that was like 10 years of work and then it just didn't work.
Mm-hmm.
And it was super hard and super frustrating. And it took me a while to get myself back together. And that's when Indiana Queen was really born, when I kind of cleared my head and came back for round two, you mm-hmm. know, but that's what's been most difficult. I mean, it has nothing to do with the gay stuff or my sexuality. The music business is very, very difficult.
Yeah.
And so, in the last couple of years, I'm finally getting somewhere. I'm finally finding my audience, you know, but it's been a very long road. Had you told me when I was 20 years old that it was going to take 20 years for it to really start to work, I don't know if I would have gone down this mm-hmm. road. I'm super happy that I did, but I had no idea how insanely long of a road it would be.
And I think the thing that's behind this, I mean, one of the questions I love to delve into with guests is, so here you are, lead singer, Indiana Queen, Kevin Thornton, a gay man, a musician. You know, if I were to say, what defines you more, gay man, being a musician, being a guy, what would you say?
What defines me the most?
Yeah.
I'm just a man. I mean, that's like, as I get older, my, you know, this is what happens. Like, your ideals about happiness change. Your ideas about what is going to fulfill you in life change, mm-hmm. you know, and today I feel like if I get up in the morning and I feel good and I feel not like the weight of the world is on my shoulders, then I think I'm winning, you know, and that was a different story that I would have, you know, than I would have told you 20 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
I'm way more down with just like human peace and happiness. That's who I am today, you know, and I'm not defined by my music. I'm not defined by my sexuality. I'm defined by peace and happiness and in the pursuit of that. So now that said, obviously my sexuality is a huge part of me.
Sure.
I'm a very sex positive person. You know, I have, I think, a pretty healthy view of myself and sexuality mm-hmm. and music fulfills the hell out of me. That's part of my happiness.
Mm-hmm.
You know, 10 years ago, 15 years ago, all I could think about was breaking through in the music industry. And today all I can think about are like my cats and mm-hmm. a glass of wine and just like enjoying my day-to-day life.
Right. But so you brought it up.
I guess
so I have to ask, so what's your favorite wine?
My go-to is a Cabernet. Okay. I like a good, like really kind of dry, full red wine. That's my go-to.
That's awesome. Oh, the reason I ask is I'm a big wine and my husband and I just came back from wine tasting yesterday. And it was, yeah. And we always go overboard, but we actually had to pick up some wine. We came home with almost three cases of wine. So yeah, we're big winos. Wow. Yeah. No, I just, yeah. I love it. So you brought up something that, you know, I don't know that a lot of the listeners may have heard the terminology before, but I'm glad you said it. So you brought up the terminology sex positive. So what does that mean to you, Kevin, to be sex positive?
It means like fully embracing that humans are sexual in nature. Mm-hmm. I think we're taught when we're younger, especially gay people, that we should have some sort of shame around sex or enjoying sex. And so sex positive to me means throwing off every single bit of that shame, mm-hmm. not being ashamed of your desires, not being ashamed of any part of your sexuality and wanting to have sex. As long as you're being responsible with consenting adults, mm-hmm. there's no such thing as being a slut. That's your life. You own it. Mm-hmm. There's no need for fear and shame. Like, haven't we all had enough of that?
Yeah. There's a flip side to that, too, that I want to interject here before you continue on, is that, you know, sex positive can also be, I'm totally cool with being completely monogamous. This is how I show up in the world. And I'm starting to find that a lot of people that, you know, because I do a lot of different sex podcasts and stuff, too, that this is now becoming a shameful thing, that people being shamed into, oh, my God, you're monogamous. What's wrong with you? It's like, no. Let's stop that stuff, too. That's kind of ridiculous, too. It's like, if we could just get the fuck over sex being a dirty word and anything that people do being shameful, then I think it'd be a whole different frickin' world here. Anyway.
It absolutely would, yeah.
Yeah, I am so, it's so empowering to hear people talk like that. And you're one of the first ones in a while that's used that phrase of being completely sex positive, because I think it is one of the most powerful things. And as a parent, I'm really talking to my, you know, young adult daughters about this. I have a 21-year-old and soon to be 18-year-old. And I'm like, please don't be shameful around your sexuality, whatever it is, or mm-hmm. about how you approach sex. That's one of the most healthy, at least, again, my perspective, one of the most healthy things to have is a very powerful, loving, caring sexual, you know, purview of yourself and how you look at it. Otherwise, it gets in the way of so, so many things.
Yeah, it does.
Yeah.
And I think, like, humans, for whatever reason, we're kind of, like, there's something in us that is a little bit prone to wanting to loathe ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
And our sexuality is like the first target. It's like mm-hmm. the easiest thing to like hold up and be ashamed of. Yeah. And just throwing that off of your being mm-hmm. is super liberating. I wasn't always that way. I mean, I grew up in a really, really religious family. And the first step was just accepting my sexuality. It took many more years beyond that to cast off every bit of the shame, you know?
Yeah, that's amazing.
Yeah.
Well, it's not amazing because I think this is something we all go through, but it's something that we have been, you know, I'm a baby boomer and, you know, I know my family, not so much my parents. My parents weren't like the weird, let's not talk about sex, but I know they were from that generation where we don't talk about that stuff, you know? And I think it's unfortunate that we haven't opened the door wider yet, because if that door was opened wider to being really comfortable about sex and sexuality, then our next generation, and I guess because I do have millennials in my household, I'm seeing how much more open they are and how much more free they are. And not to the, you know, not to the place of like, you know, free love back in the 60s, which I'm not opposed to at all. I think the freer we become as sexual beings, the more beautiful we become as humans too. So we've been doing a lot of talk about everything else, but the main gigs here. So talk to me a little bit about this whole song that came into being about a potential, which now reality, post-Trump administration. Where did this one come from for you?
You know, not to get too artsy and mysterious about it, but sometimes I feel like I just channel a song. Like, it'll just come to me, and I feel like I didn't even write it. Like, it was given to me somehow. And several months ago, I mean, I think I was maybe just like, maybe we had just watched a debate or something many months ago, and I think there was something inside of me that was like, what if he wins? And then something inside of me was like, he is going to win. And then I wrote those lyrics, and it was just sort of a reaction to that feeling. And maybe it was just like the dark side of me, like, you know, imagining worst case scenario. But so that's where that came from, you know. In the film, I didn't really use that imagery because it didn't really match what the film ended up being about. But when I wrote the song and I wrote those lyrics, that's absolutely what it was about. Just, you know, several months ago, just imagining like, what if that ends up being the road we go down? And then here we are.
And then also I know one of the other ones that I had the chance to really look at was Nashville Don't Give a Damn. So tell me a little bit about that one too.
Yeah, that's, you know, that's what I was talking about earlier. That's very much about my 20-year journey to this point of living in Nashville and trying to get a deal and trying to make it. And the thing that is important to me that I want to say is it's not a bitter song. It's not a song about anger and bitterness. It's a song about me looking at this super long journey. I've had kind of a love-hate relationship with Nashville. There's been times in my time here where it felt like everything I did was magic. And then there's been other times where I could not get someone to pick up the damn phone. And after all this time, those lyrics, Nashville Don't Give a Damn, are me saying, that is maybe often true, but it doesn't matter. I'm on my own path. I'm going to go forward anyway, whether Nashville says yes or no, because I have to, and it's the path I'm on. So it's not like an angry, bitter song. It's more of like an empowered, like, you know what? Nashville Don't Give a Damn, and I'm here anyway, and I'm moving forward anyway. So that's what that's about.
Yeah. Well, I think they're both very reflective of, you know, how you have come to this place you are in your career and where we are in our world. I mean, I think this is the, for most of us, however we manifest it, whether it be through music or writing. I know for me, a lot of mine comes to writing, or actually through this podcast. This podcast emanated from my coming out journey. And if somebody had told me back in 1999, when I came out of the closet at 36 years old, that, yeah, this is going to lead you to being a podcaster and you're going to write a book and you're going to kind of be a voice in the LGBTQ community, I would have said, you, it's all I can do to even get out of the closet right now, you know?
But
it's those interesting journeys that we start to take, you know, where we're like, wow, this is, each thing is leading me to the next, to the next, to the next thing of really being who I am and who I'm meant to be in the world. And it sounds like that's exactly what you're starting to truly express in your music, is each iteration of what, you know, discovering about yourself. So,
I mean, it's that old cliche that's absolutely true, is that it's, it is all about the journey. Mm-hmm. When you're young, you think that there's this final goal that you'll have finally made it when this happens. And, you know, now, you know, here I am, you know, 2 decades deep into this. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, I'm not looking for a goal anymore. It's all about, it's literally about the path that I'm on. That is the path mm-hmm. is actually my life and is making me who I am. So it's less linear. It's more three-dimensional.
It sounds like you're a guy who's done a lot of inner work and a lot of coming to your spiritual self. Is that true?
Yeah. I mean, like, I think especially as, you know, gay men who grow up in, you know, super religious communities and somehow get beyond that, I think you have to do that. Mm-hmm. I mean, you either do that or you self-destruct, I think.
Yeah. And there's so much self-destruction in our community, especially, I believe, so much, you know, in the gay male community. I know there's some in the lesbian community too, but for some reason, I just, maybe because I'm closer to it and I work with so many gay men, it just seems that self-destructive behavior is just rampant, you know, and it's very disturbing at times, you know, to see all this come together. So new album's out, everything's moving along. So what's next? Where do you go from here? Just keep making music?
I've already started working on the next album.
So awesome.
A lot of stuff's coming to me these days. So, mm-hmm. This album just came out. The film is out online. So, I mean, my hope is that people keep tuning in and, you know, and that it finds an audience. It's been a little more difficult. I feel like this film is definitely, my favorite things that I've done. Yeah. I'm really super proud of it. I have found that it's been a little more difficult to get people to commit to a full film. Like, we live in an age of, show me a 60-second clip at work on your cell phone. You know, it's easy to get people to watch the 60-second clip. It's been a little more difficult to get people to watch a whole film.
Yeah.
But those that do have been very glad that they did. And I'm super proud of the film. So
that's awesome,
I'm hoping that this year that film finds its audience.
Yeah. Well, and I think when you put that intention out there, you know, I've learned a lot about putting intentions. And I always, you know, we just came into the new year and I was thinking back about, okay, wow, what did I set out to do this year? I'm not Mr. Goal setting. I'm not, you know, any of that sort of guy. I mean, I have goals, obviously, but it's not like New Year's resolutions roll around and boom. But I believe in really setting intentions. And as I was reflecting over that, it's like one of the intentions was to grow my podcast. Check mark, done that. I'm now 2 times a week on that. Another intention was to do a TEDx talk. Check mark, done that. Did that in Tokyo in June. And now my intention is to be speaking more and more on bigger stages about, you know, maybe LGBTQ stuff, but about everyone being able to be exactly who they are and everyone being able to come out of the closets of their life and live their lives just as they are meant to without others being judgmental. And I feel that swell coming because I've set the intention. So I would invite you, brother, to set the intention that the film will find its place and you never know, and that your music will continue to just influence and, you know, give people a new perspective on your view of the world coming from you as a gay country artist doing some really beautiful stuff there. Just
thanks.
Awesome.
I'll get on board with that. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So one of the things I always like to ask, and I think you're really a good person to throw this question at, it's kind of the one I usually wrap up with each show, is if you could leave some words of wisdom, whether it's somebody who's wanting to break into the music industry or somebody who's struggling with their sexuality, what would you love to just say to the audience about, you know, just keeping on going and, you know, finding a way to make it through these, what we sometimes consider overwhelming challenges of being our LGBTQ selves in the world?
I would say just like, stop being afraid. I mean, that's the thing. Like if I look back at all the moments in my life where I was just like bound by fear, mm-hmm. it's like funny, like time does a thing where you can look back and be like, why was I so afraid of that? Like now that you're on the other side of mm-hmm. it, like you can always look back and tell yourself in a moment where you were like, where fear was holding you to something. After time passes and the fear kind of dissipates, we always look back and say, what was I so afraid of? Like mm-hmm. I could have been fine. That was true then. And it's also true in the future. Mm-hmm. Like, the more you can just like throw fear out of your life, whether it's about getting a record deal or whether it's about coming out of the closet, mm-hmm. it's like your life is so short, and it's your life, it's your experience, it's your happiness. Like, throw all that shit off of you and live without it. I mean, and I guess maybe it's easier said than done, depending on your circumstance. I mean, if you're, you know, a teenager living in the deep South, you know, with a family who all voted for Donald Trump and is super religious, that's a more extreme circumstance than others might have experienced. But there's always a way out. Like, it might entail packing your bags and getting the hell out of there, you know, but God, don't live a life that's dictated by fear. And we might be entering a new era of, you know, this Republican administration where we all find ourselves facing that again, where we have things that we might literally be reasonable to be afraid of. We've got to keep moving forward anyway. I can't imagine what it would be like now that we're at this point for an administration to try and start turning the clock backwards.
Right.
Like, I have no idea what kind of revolution that's going to bring about. My hope is that we all don't start getting paralyzed by fear and staying quiet and staying home and like shrinking into a weird closet again. That would be horrible.
Well, I know when I'm working with someone who, you know, whether they're coming out of the closet or they're challenged by something at work or whatever the different things that happen when people come to work with me as a coach, one of my favorite phrases is, fear only lives in the future. Because the moment you confront fear in the present, it's confronted. And as soon as you're past the fear in the present, it's done. You now have the answer, but fear resides in the future. It's the only place it resides, and it resides in the future in uncertainty. As soon as we go, okay, I accept that I don't know the answer. I can't know the answer till I'm there. Then it begins to dissipate the fear. But I don't even remember who I learned that from. It wasn't mine. So it's not Rick's wisdom. Yeah. I heard it from someone else. But, you know, I kind of took what they said and I really simplified it to fear lives in the future. So live in the moment.
Yeah.
And when you come up against that fear, you know, I could be sitting here in lovely California where we're quite earthquake prone. But I guess now most of the rest of the country is starting to become that way, too. But I could be sitting here going, oh, my God, what if there's an earthquake here in the next 5 minutes after I get off this interview? Well, I could freak out. There's nothing I can do. I don't know it's going to happen. So until it actually happens, there's no reason to have that fear. And then that energy can go be put into something else.
Absolutely.
I think it's just a really beautiful, you know, way to kind of wrap everything up here. But I just realized I had one question I didn't ask, which would have been better to have asked earlier. But hey, I'm the host, so I can ask this shit whenever I want to. So where did the name Indiana Queen come from? I'm curious about that.
Well, you know, it just kind of came to me. Mm. I knew when I was putting this together, when it first started coming together, maybe 4 years ago, I knew that I wanted it to be an out queer folk country project. So I don't know. It just kind of came to me. I'm from Indiana. I mean, I don't refer to myself as a queen, but there was something about it that I thought it was almost like a double entendre. Like, it's rootsy sounding. It sounds like it could be a riverboat or some kind of rootsy kind of Americana thing. Right. But it also like says something to who I am. I'm an openly gay man from Indiana, and that's the perspective I'm writing these songs from. So there was a little bit of a tongue-in-cheek of, you know, it's a rootsy Americana-sounding name. It's also about a gay guy from Indiana.
And you know, it's all you, right? It's all you.
It's all me.
Yeah.
I have kind of a rotating cast of people that play with me, but for the most part, the project is all mine. And I play all the instruments on the albums, and what you hear is all me. But when we play out in the world, we did several pride festivals last year. I have a couple guys that come along with me.
Oh yeah. I was going to say you really would be magical if you could do all that by yourself. So that would be pretty freaking amazing, man. Well, hey, you know what, Kevin, good luck to you, man. I'm so excited for what's coming down. I've really enjoyed the music I've gotten to listen to and the videos I've watched. Just keep doing what you're doing, man, because you're right. If we go hide now, we're only going to feed into the madness that potentially, and I'm saying potentially, folks, because we don't know. We're sitting here on the cusp of seeing where we're going. So don't let the fear of the future hold you in your closet. Hey, man, just thanks for being here today. It's been great chatting with you. And you know what? I think we'll probably have you back again when you're ready to release your next album, man. So let's keep that in mind.
All right. Hey, thanks so much.
Absolutely, yeah, man. Have a great day. And for all of you who've been listening, there we go. Another episode of the Coming Out Lounge. I want each of you to take the music in your souls and your hearts and get out there and never stop stepping out, stepping up, and stepping into living your powerful truth. I'm Rick Clemens, the Coming Out Coach, and we'll catch you in just a few days on another episode of the Coming Out Lounge. Take care, everyone. Bye-bye. Hey, 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 Closet Dwellers and Coming Out Lounge listeners. I wanted to invite you to check something out. You know, for all the years that I've been a Coming Out Coach, one thing I've learned is sometimes people come to do the work with me and they only need a little bit of help to get over something very particular and very important to them. It could be reconciling their religion and sexuality. Maybe it's learning how to have the difficult conversations where they say, I'm gay. Possibly it could be, oh my God, I'm out of the closet, but now how do I do this same-sex dating and mating sort of thing? Well, what I can tell you is throughout the years, there are common things that show up over and over and over again. And what I've heard most from my clients and listeners of the podcast is, I want a way to work with you just on these particular subjects. Yay, I am so excited because I've taken the action and I've made this possible. So how do you find out about these particular programs? You go to thecomingoutcoach.com, or if you're on the show page right now listening to the podcast or have just listened to the podcast, over to the right-hand side of the podcast description, everything is an icon that says one-on-one coaching sessions. Click on that button. You'll be taken to a page that describes each of the different 9 sessions I'm offering. They are one-on-one sessions that we can do via phone, Skype, or even FaceTime. They're very action-oriented. We go right to the topic that you want to talk about. And each of these sessions also includes a copy of my book, Frankly, My Dear, I'm Gay. So what more could you ask for? You get me for 90 minutes devoted to you, plus my book. So go check it out. See if there's something that could help you as you step out, step up, and step in to living your powerful truth. Take care. I'm Rick Clemens, the Coming Out Coach. I look forward to working with you.
You've just experienced the Coming Out Lounge. Go online to www.comingoutlounge.com to learn more. And tune in again next week for more stories and tips for being true to yourself.